Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, works just like an ordinary human being, yet he does not desire to enjoy the fruits of work. He is full in knowledge, free from material desires and diversions, and completely independent. As the supreme teacher of human society, he teaches his own way of activities, and thus he inaugurates the real path of religion. I request everyone to follow him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is the sum and substance of our Krishna consciousness movement. We are simply requesting human society to follow in the footsteps of the teacher of Bhagavad Gita. Follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita as it is, and your life will be successful. That is the summary of the Krishna consciousness movement. The organizer of the Krishna consciousness movement is teaching everyone how to follow Lord Ramachandra, how to follow Lord Krishna, and how to follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this material world, we need a leader for a monarchy or good government. Lord Sri Ramachandra, by his practical example, showed how to live for the benefit of all human society. He fought with demons like Ravana. He carried out the orders of his father, and he remained the faithful husband of Mother Sita. Thus, there is no comparison to Lord Ramachandra's acting as an ideal king. Indeed, people still hanker for Ram Raj, a government conducted like that of Lord Ramachandra. Similarly, although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he taught his disciple and devotee Arjuna how to lead a life ending in going back home, back to Godhead. Chaktva deham punar janma naitimam eti sorjana. Okay, I'm going to ask you questions about this later. All teachings, political, economic, social, religious, cultural, and philosophical, are to be found in Bhagavad Gita. I'll be asking you to give me a verse that pertains to each of these things. Political, economic, social, religious, cultural, and philosophical are to be found in Bhagavad Gita. One only has to follow them strictly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead also comes as Lord Chaitanya just to play the part of a pure devotee. Thus, the Lord teaches us in different ways just to make our lives successful. And Svayambhuva Manu requests us to follow him. Svayambhuva Manu is the leader of mankind, and he has given a book called Manu Samhita to guide human society. Herein, he directs us to follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his different incarnations. These incarnations are described in Vedic literature, and Jayadev Goswami had described 10 important incarnations in summary. Keshavadrita Mina Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Keshavadrita Buddha Sharira Jaya Jagadisha Hare, etc. Svayambhuva Manu instructs us to follow the instructions of God's incarnations, especially Krishna's instructions of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Appreciating Bhakti Marg as instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thus depicted the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Siksartam Eka Purusha Purana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari Kripambudir Yastam Aham Prapadye. Let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who had descended in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us real knowledge. His devotional service and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness. He had descended because he is an ocean of transcendental mercy. Let me surrender unto his lotus feet. Chaitanya Chandrodaya Nataka 674. In this age of Kali, people cannot follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore the Lord himself takes the part of Sri Krishna Chaitanya to teach personally how to become Krishna conscious. He asks everyone to follow him and to become a guru to deliver the fallen souls of Kali Yuga. Yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh amara agaya guru hana tara edesh. I instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 7th chapter, text 128. The coherent purpose of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to teach human society how to be happy by following the instructions of the Supreme Lord. Om Agyana Tamanandasya Janan Jana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I wanted to put this verse into some historical context. This is verses, not spoken exactly, described there, that you remember the picture, Swayambhuva Manu, he's retiring from life, household life. He went to the forest, and he's standing on one leg. It's interesting to hear this because sometimes, I know for a while I was thinking, all these guys in India standing on one leg is bogus. Where does it come from? But evidently there is some authority for it, to stand on one leg as an austerity. And you can imagine how austere it is to stand on one leg. We get tired standing on two legs. What is bigger, standing on one leg? So in that pose, he was mentally praying. Described there was no, it wasn't lecturing to anyone. It was a prayer that he had. So it's quite an extraordinary that these prayers were captured and written down. So there are 14 Manus. Swayambhuva Manu is the first. I'm going to list their names. Swayambhuva, Swarochisa, Uttama, Tamasa, Raivata, Chakshusha, Vaivasvata. That's where we are now. Our current Manu is Vaivasvata Manu. He's looking after the universe now, Vaivasvata Manu. Following him will come Savirni, Daksha Savirni, Brahma Savarni, Dharma Savarni, Rudra Savarni, Deva Savarni, Indra Savarni. So not only are the leaders already been described, but the following leaders are also been described. Now, this is very difficult for people to appreciate. Most people in society are not equipped at all to deal with this concept that's being portrayed by these people. These are universal managers, manus, who are responsible for everything in the universe. And they have an unbelievable vast period of life. For example, each manu lives for, his reign is 306 million years. 720,000 years. And that's described that a day of Brahma, there is 1,000 Divya Yugas, or Maha Yugas. And a Maha Yuga is made up of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. And altogether, they come to 4,320,000 years. So 1,000 of those is a day of Brahma. And in that 1,000, there are 14 Manus. So basically, there's 71. 71 yuga cycles is the period of universal management for each Manu. So that's 306,720,000 years. When you're at school, or if you looked at any kind of history books, they don't go back very far. At a very short period of time, everything becomes cloudy. They don't really know what happened before a certain period of time. And generally they say that people with some kind of coherent consciousness were around 50,000 years ago. Before that, there were simply monkeys, apes, and various go back further time, and they start becoming various other kind of things. So now we're dealing with periods of time that they can't even conceive of. And that's just one Manu, 306,720,000 years. Now, we hear that we are in the Vaivasvata Manu. And what's significant about Vaivasvata Manu? Anyone knows particularly what's significant about this particular Manu? Lord Krishna appears on the 28th Maha Yuga, the 28th. So we can work out how far we are into a... Actually, this is interesting. These Manus are all in one day of Brahma. So we're not going to go into the calculation of how old Brahma lives. This inconceivable. So Krishna appears on the 28th Maha Yuga, and we hear that he appeared 5,000 years ago. So we can calculate how far in we are into a day of Brahma, which is 1.96 billion years. To this particular start of our Manu was 1,840,320,000 years. So you add on another 120 million years where this Manu has been reigning, and you come to 1.96 billion years. So therefore, we can estimate that this universe has been habited for 1.96 billion years. And actually, interesting, I mentioned before that Dhritakarma, in his presentation of archaeology, he would say that from the Vedic perspective, we would expect to find life going back about 2 billion years. And therefore, then he presented evidence to show that that's probably the case. Apparently, I mentioned before, there's some spheres they found in some mines in South Africa. And these spheres were found in rock strata that they have dated 2 billion years. So you'll expect to find life. Now, this is also creates a great challenge. Recently, I was listening to a presentation about the people who created some of the South American pyramids. And some of these pyramids have got stones that weigh 400 tons. Imagine, to give you an idea what 400 tons is like, each of our bulls weighs about a ton. So imagine 400 of them stacked together. That's how much weight one of these stones is. And they're completely cut. And they built buildings based on these stones. These stones were transported 200 miles. And they had to be transported up to, 1,000 meters or something above the sea level. So modern historians, they can't estimate why this is. Because they have this idea that the wheel wasn't invented when this pyramid was done. But from our perspective, with a period of time of 1,840,000,000 years, do you think no one would invent a wheel in all that time? So they have such a paucity of reference material that they speculate. And you hear it all the time. Sometimes people are trying to understand the truth, but because they don't have the Vedic understanding, they get lost. They lose things. They say things that kind of undermine their position. They basically fall into Darwinian examples, and then they lose the essence of truth. So now what's significant here is the Manu Samhita is it here, Prabhupada writes, is attributed to Swayambhuva Manu. So the Manu Samhita, you could say, is a pretty old book. 1,840,000,000 years old is the Manu Samhita. Anyone ever read the Manu Samhita? You read it or you leaf through a few choice verses? Property law. So this is Swayambhuva Manu. And this is actually what his duty is. His duty is to help society. And let me just write things. His service is to reestablish the system of religion and to conduct universal affairs. And you can see that by the writing of the Manu Samhita, that's how he's conducting those affairs. You give people manuals how to operate. For example, at the moment, the temple is going through a system of temple manuals. How the temple functions, what governs why we decide certain things. So this is very common. If you're running not just a planet, but a universe, you want to give some guidelines. So it suggests that the Manu Samhita is not just earthly. It has guidance that seems to indicate that it's got universal application. So these are truths. Now, nowadays, hardly anyone refers to the Manu Samhita. It's also interesting that there's other books of moral codes called by Yajnavalkya. Later on, we're going to hear that Yajnavalkya is also an incarnation of Lord Krishna. So this is what Manu does. He gives people the codes, how to operate the universe, how to get the best from it, and particularly in terms of the closing statements of this purport, how to become happy by following the instructions of the Supreme Lord. How we can become happy in life, and how we can go back home, back to Godhead. So we have to be convinced. We have to weigh the evidence up. Is modern science correct? Is modern science not correct? And actually, there's huge motivation. Interesting here that this is God. I mean, what a fantastic God he is when you look at the qualifications he has. He says, Ihamanam, he's acting for our benefit. We want people to act for our benefit. We generally act for our own benefit. When we meet other people, when we have leaders, we want them to act for our benefit. So Krishna, the Supreme Lord, he's only acting for our benefit. That's his whole focus. Nirahankritam. He's not entangled by anything. He's not perplexed. He's not full of his own desires. He's simply peaceful. Buddham, who is completely in knowledge. Nowadays, what they teach as knowledge is not actually knowledge, and we hear it many times that science that we're taught is no longer taught today because it's proved to be false. So it's not actually knowledge. Knowledge is always something that it always exists. You might have, temporary knowledge, or but real knowledge is eternal. It is always the fact. So Krishna is fully full of knowledge. We want to go to someone. We hope that our leaders know things. We expect our leaders to know things. We expect the Prime Minister to know things, or we expect him to know someone who knows things. And it's very troubling for us when we find out actually he didn't know something. And it's not very satisfying when he says he didn't know something. But Krishna, our Lord, he is not in a situation where there's nothing to be known. He knows everything. Buddham. Nirashishya, Shisham. He doesn't have any desire to enjoy the fruits of his activities. Sometimes we're worried about exploitation. My leader might exploit me. He may use me or she may use me for her own interests. When you work for somebody, that will be the case. You are simply a commodity to help your boss acquire greater wealth. That's why generally in the Vedic culture, everybody, most people, are meant to be independent, and only certain people are meant to work for other people. So to have someone that you're working for who actually has got no desires by your fruits or their own fruits is actually a wonderful quality. Purnam, who is full and therefore has no need to fulfill desire. There's nothing you can give Krishna. He's completely full. Nowadays, people have so much, yet they want more. How much money would satisfy you? What quality you see in nowadays are people with billions and billions of wealth, and yet they're still not satisfied. They want more. They want what you have. And we hear that Ravana, he had so many beautiful wives, but he wanted Sita. So although he had so many beautiful wives, could fulfill all the desires he wanted to fulfill the desire with another man's wife. So Krishna's not like that. He is completely satisfied. He's completely full. and it says here then that he gives people teaches people his own way of life, how to live a godly way of life. So Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And people can become happy by living a Krishna-focused life. And this verse, a number of verses, yes, you can see Srila Prabhupada had so much conviction about the Bhagavad Gita as it is, or the Bhagavad Gita. And he basically wanted to make sure that people get the Bhagavad Gita as it is, therefore he titled it the Bhagavad Gita as it is. But when you read it, you see the Bhagavad Gita as it is, not as somebody else wants it to be, or what they hope to get some name and fame from it, is as it is. So constantly, on many, many pages, many, many times, Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita as it is. So now we come to this, and he also, then here Prabhupada mentions three things, Lord Ram, Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These three personalities of Godhead are the sources of our inspiration and the objects of our devotion. He mentions three primary things why Lord Ram is so important and so particular. Four things. Lord Ram is a rishi, Raja Rishi, a saintly king. How we wish for a saintly king. Nowadays, the rulers of society, they profess spirituality. They go to church. They mention the word God. But are they saintly people? In one side, they speak of God, and next side, they're killing innocent people. Okay, when there's a war, you have to fight. No problem. That's Kshatriya duty. But why are you killing innocent people? Why are you killing the innocent animals? How is that saintly? How would a saintly man kill an animal? What process would a saintly person kill an animal? What is the process for that? So Lord Ram was a saintly king. The next thing was that, it says here, showed how to live for the benefit of all human society. What a wonderful thing to have a king who is living for the welfare of human society. Today, it's a great trouble for us when we find how opulent the leaders become after they stop being a leader and to see who's funding them. My wife told me not to do any conspiratorial things, but I couldn't help but slip it in. Who's funding them? They've become very wealthy after politics. So what does that mean? It means they while they're in government or while they're in leadership, they weren't actually acting for the benefit of society. They're acting for their own future benefit. And then they're cashing in after. But imagine having a king whose only focus is to care for the people in the society. So Lord Ram did that. He fought with demons like Ravana. We feel very insecure. There are so many demons around nowadays. Okay, they don't have horns. They haven't got big teeth. They're not in some kind of, you know, spooky guise. And actually that makes it more evil because you can't necessarily see them. Nowadays, for example, there are so many crooked policies that trouble us immensely. Why is the government allowing this, we say many times. Why are they doing this? There is a crooked financial system that money is basically tapped onto a keyboard and it exists by some computer screen. It's got no inherent wealth. How is the government allowing this? How are they allowing an economy based on fictitious money? How are they allowing this? Nowadays, intoxication is promoted. Drink this, smoke this. How are they allowing that? They know it destroys families. They know it creates ill health. I think most cancers come from cigarette smoke. How is the government allowing this to go on? They promote debt. Every day on my computer, my phone, I don't know who gave them my number. Would you like to loan some money? Just tap this number, you can borrow £10,000 or £1,000 in a few minutes. They're encouraging people to go into debt. How are the government allowing this? Why are they allowing this? Extortionate, you know, loan sharks that basically flood the world with advertisements. Why are they allowing this? Promiscuity. On the media, on the news, they're just promoting. I was in a dentist the other day, and a magazine they flicked through is all about all these stars and how they're swapping partners every few weeks and the latest one. As we mentioned, and also medicines. Is it real, truthful medicine that they're offering you, or is it just to fill the coffers of some corporation? So how is the government allowing this? So Lord Ram, he went out to fight. He went to go and kill Ravana. So a real leader will plunder these things. But nowadays, if they do it, they often get killed themselves. But still, a real leader wants to make sure that these things are stopped. So Lord Ram did that. Next thing he did, he carried out the orders of his father. Well, what's extraordinary about that? Doesn't sound too extraordinary. But actually, it is extraordinary. How many sons follow the orders of the father? How many say, my father told me to do this, I'm doing it? Nowadays, that would be seen as a sign of weakness. But in the case of Lord Ram, it's a sign of strength. His father made a promise to his wife. And when Lord Ram heard about it, he said, yes, I'll give up my kingdom and I'll fulfill the orders of my father. Extraordinary behavior. And finally, he was faithful to his wife. A wife wants the husband to be faithful. And Lord Ram, he didn't get his, like Krishna had 16,000 wives, Lord Ram had one. And actually, for a wife, for the husband to be faithful and be dedicated to her, it makes her very happy, but also it's extraordinary. For a Kshatriya oftentimes would have more than one wife. I was speaking to Acharyavan. He's from a culture still where it's quite normal for a man to have more than one wife, but you have to provide for them. Each wife has to have their own house. You can't have two wives being in the same house. That's why Krishna gave each one a palace. So that was Lord Ram. And Lord Krishna, he taught Arjuna to live his life, but to always think of him and go back home, back to Godhead. So I'm going to come to this point now. Srila Prabhupada's conviction in the importance of the Bhagavad Gita. And I want you to give me the verses, or give me a verse that you think answers those issues that he's raising. The first one he mentions is politics. Give me a verse from the Bhagavad Gita that, let me give the word again, he says. All teachings, political, economic, social, religious, cultural, and philosophical, are to be found in the Bhagavad Gita. So can anyone think of a verse where politics is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita? Of course, I would be struggling if I was sitting on the audience. I had the opportunity of actually studying for the class, so I've got my verses ready. Can anyone think of a verse? Can you translate, please?
It says that scheme of knowledge is knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. So I guess politics is included in Europe.
Sorry, can you speak clearly so we can hear what you're saying, please?
I'm saying 9.2 to Bhagavad Gita.
942.
9.2.
9.2, okay.
It says that scheme of knowledge.
Yes?
Bhagavad Gita. So if it's scheme of knowledge, then politics is included.
Okay, that's a general term. That's not specifically dealing with... It's okay. Perfect. Anything more specific? This is interesting. I remember a class by... everyone hear that? Yadyada chari shrestas tat tarayavato janaha sai pramanam kurte lokas tat anavarate. Whatever action a great man performs, come and follow. Whatever standards he sets by example, he acts, all the world pursues. I was hearing a class once by Ridhananda Maharaj, and he's a Sanskrit scholar. And he was saying, yum, yum. He was saying that in every case, whatever action a leader follows, other people are naturally going to follow. You may not like it, but you're going to. You see it practically. Sometimes you can tell who's a disciple of which spiritual master? Because they wear clothes similarly, they use similar kind of words, somebody even walk the same. It's a power that it's a natural power. So yes, this is about politics. The leader must set a very good example. Any other verse I think of? Mm-hmm. You're getting one about social now, not politics. No, you're okay, Okay, we can find them there.
Social, if the women are degraded and the society
shows the importance of tradition, degradation of society, destruction of dynasty, the family become the family traditions are vanquished, irreligion in the family becomes prominent, the women become polluted, unwanted progeny, hellish life for those who pollute and those who are recipients of it. That's a social verse. Okay, one I had, Maraj. People engage according to nature. The Bhagavad Gita talks about the different social, and it is political. Also, it could be political for the Kshatriyas, what their roles are, and also for society. One I had was Bhagavad Gita 2:31. And I find it very interesting about politics. Let me just read this one to you. Considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles, and so there is no need for hesitation. Now, what's interesting is the word for word, And it says, if you look at it, fighting for religious principles, there is no better engagement. It does not exist a better engagement than fighting on religious principles. So for politics, a ruler has to be willing to kill, has to root out all the symbols of Adam. There's nothing more important to him than that. So that's politics. He has to be a ruthless weeder out of evil in the society. Okay, that's politics. Economics. How does the Bhagavad Gita, what does it say about economics? Anyone got any verse to hand? Okay, why is this about economics? Okay. Okay, I'm not quite clear how this is about economics. If you worship Krishna, everything falls into place. Very general, I would say. Yes. Okay, there's a verse that says, be thou happy by this sacrifice, and by performance, more or less, all good things will come. So if you do yajna, you will achieve economic prosperity. Yes. If you eat patram, pushpam, phalam, leaf, fruit, flower, and water, you live simply. So it's good for economics. It would be cheaper to live. Okay? Okay, if you serve Krishna, then whatever you got, you'll be able to have it, and you'll be able to accumulate more. Okay? So, good point. One principle of economics is be satisfied. Don't always be hankering for more and more and more. Be peaceful. A verse that I had, that I thought was, Anadbivanti Bhutani, all living beings subsist on food. This is actually meant to be the source of economics. Krishi Gauraksha Vaniyam. Krishi means agriculture, Gauraksha means cow protection, Vaniyam means trading the surpluses of both. So this is actually meant to be the heart of economics. Okay, we'll go to the next one. Social we had. Of course, and also with the Varnashram. Religious. The best religion is not to have to give up all religion and surrender to Krishna. Okay? Very good. Always think of me. Become my devotee. worship me, offer your obeisance to me. This is actually the principle of religion. All religions really talk about this. It's a kind of unsectarian principle of religion. All religions talk about thinking about God, bowing down for him.